The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, I'm going to throw a name at you, and you tell me if it sounds familiar. You're going to know the story, but you probably don't know the name. The name is Kim Phuc Pan Thai. Okay, Kim Phuc Pan Thai. You probably don't know the name, but if you're probably north of 45 or 50 years of age, you know the story. An iconic Vietnam War photo shows 9-year-old Kim Phuc Pan Thai fleeing naked down a highway, horribly burned by napalm. Remember that? Does that ring a bell now? Yet Kim, once suicidal over her scars and being exploited as a North Vietnamese propaganda tool, could ultimately proclaim, quote, "I am thankful for the fire road because eventually it led me to Jesus," who had also been ruthlessly scarred, obviously, as we know, and persecuted at one time or another. Each of us will walk down an unexpected fire road of deep pain, suffering, and in some cases, unbearable loss. Perhaps the odds are pretty good across about 30 radio stations and podcasts and Facebook Live and YouTube Live. That's for some of you, this is painfully real right now. So in some cases, unbearable loss. Peter tells us not to be surprised when the fires of trial engulf us for a season. That's 1 Peter 4:12. And James affirms the reality of trials afflicting God's choicest servants, so you don't get out of it just because you're a follower. What will you do when you encounter an unanticipated season of trial as the Good Shepherd leads you through your own fire road, like Kim Phuc Pan Thai went down hers? And of course, so we're coming into the holiday season. Next week is Thanksgiving. Christmas is right around the corner. Studies show some 40% of us experience added stress during the holidays. I think most of us would say amen to that. Whether it's just familial with family or the wounds are just harder to deal with, maybe a loss of a loved one in the last 12 months or more recently, something with COVID, whatever the case may be, it tends to get more difficult in the holiday season. So today on Theology Thursday with our friends at Bob Jones Seminary, the theology of trial or anxiety, finding your new normal on the fire road. Dr. Sam Horn, welcome back to the show. How are you, my brother?
Oh, I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for having me back. I enjoyed very much being on the first time. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, and it's great to have you back on, and I know we all need at one level or another some help with this. But I also know before we kind of jump into, we're going to go through kind of 4 points that were here that are going to be the basis for a book that Sam is writing with our guest from last week, Les Olila. Is it Olila?
Olala.
Olala. That's such Olala. A cool name. Finish. Les Olala was name. On. Finding Your New Normal is a book they're working on. And we talked about that recently. Also, the blog post I shared on Facebook today on my personal page as well as the radio page. But you can always find that, what we're talking about each week on Theology Thursday with our friends at BJU Seminary. Just go to the webpage that they've set up specifically for you listening and watching the show, seminary.bju.edu/radio. Okay, seminary.bju.edu/radio. We're going to be talking about these four main points from that particular blog post. But Sam, I know you also had a kind of an expanded story of this woman that we all know, certainly by picture, not so much by name.
Yeah, so, you know, I was working on this book with Les, and the idea is finding a new normal when normal stops for you. Mm-hmm. And it does for all of us. Every one of us is going to have a day when we get up and life as we know it, normal as we know it, stops, and we have to go into a new normal. So I came across this story in a book called Fire Road that Kim Phuc wrote. It's her own story. And she talks about, as a 9-year-old girl coming out of the village in Vietnam that had been napalm, and of course she was covered with napalm, and literally the clothes burned off her back. And she ran as far as she could for as long as she could, collapsed. And an American soldier, trying to be merciful to her, gave her water to drink. And because her body was still burning, he doused her with water. And the chemical compound that makes up napalm bonds with water. And so she caught back on fire.
Oh,
and it was just a horrible scenario. She ends up in the hospital, covered with burns. And, you know, as you said, she grew up with this, tried everything she could. Her parents followed a Vietnamese deity, and she prayed to that deity regularly. for relief, and nothing happened. So she goes off to college, University of Saigon, and the North Vietnamese government finds her and begins using her as a propaganda tool. And so one day she got word that they were coming to get her, and she ran and hid in all places at the library. Mm. And so she hid down behind some shelves in the library waiting for these people to leave. And while she was down there, she looked down on the bottom shelf and she saw a row of books, and one of the books was a New Testament.
Wow.
And she pulled that New Testament out, and for a solid hour, she read that New Testament. She read the Gospels, sort of skimmed them.
Yeah.
But that's how she found out about this person who had scars. And so that began a journey. That was in 1982, and in Christmas Eve that year, she found herself in a little Christian church, and she became a Christian.
Wow.
And that wonderful quote, she said, "I'm thankful for the fire road, because eventually it led me to Jesus." And yep. That's true for all of us who have fire roads.
That's exactly
that's
right.
That's really the premise of the book.
And again, I would caution all of us to don't compare your fire road to somebody else's fire road. In your
correct.
Context, that's your fire road. If you know somebody that's got a particularly a more, quote-unquote, disturbing story, a more heartbreaking story, don't negate the power of your own story, because it doesn't quite measure up, if you will, to somebody else's. We all have fire road experiences, and they're valid and important in the context in which they happen to you and from your perspective. So don't try not to jump on the comparison box, but four really powerful points here that we're going to work through today with Dr. Sam Horn from BJU Seminary. Acknowledge, accept, adapt, and accelerate. So let's start with acknowledge, because I think this is one of these things that we really struggle with is, you know, Lord, how could you let this happen to me?
And I think that's really important, Steve. As you mentioned, we can't compare our experience to somebody else's, because it's our experience.
Right.
And it's tailor-made for us by the God who knows everything and controls everything. The four words that you just articulated that are really the heart of the book come from Les Olala. They really are his ideas, and they're very powerful truths that help us navigate fire and the road of fire when we find ourselves on it. So, you know, for example, when you wake up in the morning and normal ends, and it can end in any number of ways. It can end with a phone call, and it's somebody on the other line telling you about some horrible accident that just happened. And the person in that car just left your house. It was your husband or son or your wife.
Yeah.
And it just ended for you. Normal just stopped. Or it could be at a doctor's office where you're getting the results of a routine scan.
That's right.
And I had a friend go through that not 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I think we're hitting up a break here, Sam, so just hold that thought. Talking to Dr. Sam Horn today from BJU Seminary, The Theology of Trial, Finding Your New Normal on the Fire Road. Such an important topic. We'll pick it up there when we come back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday with our friends at BJU Seminary. And as a reminder, we're kind of working today through a blog post that our guest today, Dr. Sam Horn, did with Les Olala, which Les was on the show just recently. It was an amazing conversation that we had about humanism and high gear, and how do you lead in that as a person of faith. And it was just a fantastic show. We did that just a week ago. And then today, Dr. Sam Horn back in the highlight with us as we're talking about this. So this particular blog, The Theology of Trial, Finding Your New Normal on the Fire Road, which is a reference to that young girl that we all know of from the picture out of Vietnam, who was caught up in the napalm bombing there, that she was running up the street buck naked and just brutal picture. Most of us that are, you know, 45, 50 years of age, that's something that's burned into our conscience. We know that picture, and that's the basis of this. But if you want to check it out, I put the links up on Facebook Live on the radio show page today, on the Steve Noble Show page on Facebook. Or you can just go to the page that our friends at BJU set up specifically for the listeners on the show. That's seminary.bju.edu/radio. Okay, go there and you'll find all the blog posts that we reference, including the one we're talking about today, working through these 4 points. And again, Sam, thanks for being with us today. It's just
awesome. You're welcome. What a blessing.
So acknowledge is the first one. The expected shocking end of normal produces denial and confusion, like you mentioned. It could be the phone call, could be the visit to the doctor, and all of a sudden your life is radically transformed and you have to find a new normal. But what do we mean by acknowledge?
So acknowledge is what happens when reality intersects with your life, mm-hmm. even if it's a reality you don't want. You can't deny reality for very long. I mean, so you can set the dinner table just like you did all the other days, and it doesn't matter how how often you set that table, the person is never going to sit in that chair again. Or you can have the bedroom preserved exactly like it was the last time you saw them. They're never going to sleep in that bed again. You can show up to your office on Monday morning, just like you've done all the other Monday mornings, but somebody else is in that office. So normal, as you know it, is done, and reality forces you to acknowledge that. And you can see it in Job. I mean, Job is a primary example of this. Man. Because when he woke up one morning, by the time he went to bed that night, his entire normal was gone. All of his wealth was lost. His servants were brutally slain by marauding bandits. And then a freak whirlwind comes, and his all seven of his children gone in an instant. I mean, I cannot imagine the trauma and the pain and the emotional anguish. You know, there are five verbs that immediately describe what happened to Job. He stood up. He arose. He tore his robe. He shaved his head. And he fell on the ground. I mean, think about those verbs. They're exactly what happens to us. We're shocked. We're grieved. We're in pain. We're in agony. But the fifth verb is this. He worshiped. He worshiped. And he ran to God instead of running away from God. Because he knew that God knew.
That's right. And I think that's one of the things when you start looking at that list of verbs and everything that he went through, there is a time and a season for that. And it's different for each person. It's not like, hey, how quickly should I stop grieving this, or how quickly should I get over my shock? And to allow those things to happen, anger, even anger towards God is normal. We have to show ourselves a little bit of grace there when it comes to that. But just kind of acknowledging the fact that now I'm into a new normal, and then the question becomes, what do you do now? And that kind of takes us into our second point, which I think is really, really difficult. I've seen this in other people's lives, struggled it with a certain extent in my own life. But the notion of once we acknowledge our new normal, we have to choose the path. Well, in this case, we can talk about Naomi and then Job about accepting. So help us understand that.
So acknowledge happens because reality doesn't stop. It can't be denied. You know, it's what we were talking about a minute ago. The cancer scan came back positive, and now you've got to deal with it. All the wishing and all the denial doesn't change the reality, and because you have to live in that reality, it smacks you up on the face all the time. So you have to acknowledge that. There's a huge difference between acknowledging reality and accepting the loss. And the reason for that is that accepting is a matter of the will. Right? We have to understand, and as you said, we got to give people a lot of grace because some people never get there.
Yeah.
I mean, they acknowledge the loss, but they never accept the fact that this has happened to them. And there's a huge story in the Bible that kind of displays this, and that is the story of Naomi. You remember Naomi in the Bible, Ruth's mother-in-law, famous woman in the Bible, has a book named after Ruth, and her mother-in-law was Naomi. And Naomi lived in Israel in the town of Bethlehem. And during the course of a famine, her husband took her and her two sons to Moab. Her sons married two Moabitess women, Orpah and Ruth. And in the space of 10 years, Naomi's world exploded. She had three massive funerals. And so here she is, a foreigner in Moab with two daughter-in-laws and no more sons. You couldn't be in a worse spot if you were a Jewish widow with no future. So she decides to go back to Bethlehem. And as she's getting ready to leave, her daughter-in-laws are coming with her. And she says to them, you need to stay here. You need to go back to your families and you need to go back to your gods, because the hand of God has been harsh. It has been bitter against me. You can see that Naomi acknowledged the loss of her husband and her sons, but she wasn't nearly ready to accept that. And so she really compels her daughters about this. And so Orpah goes back, and Ruth is still determined to come with her. And Naomi goes at her again and pretty much says the same thing. I mean, think about this. Here is a woman who worships the true God of heaven, and she's so upset at what God has allowed to come into her life that she's actually telling her daughter-in-laws, it's better for you to go worship pagan gods than to come and follow my God who has done this to me. Now, I'm not casting a stone at Naomi because all of us have been there.
Sure.
All of us have had a normal that has exploded in such a painful way that it's almost impossible for us to come to grips with how could this have happened? How could this be? And then some helpful people come into our life to remind us about Romans 8:28.
Yeah.
And it's like rubbing salt in a wound.
Yeah.
You ever been there? It's like somebody says, well, God works all things for good. And you know that's theology is true, but at that moment in your life, that's the last thing you want to hear.
Yeah, be very careful, because when you pick up Romans 8:28, you might be thinking you're picking up a Band-Aid or a salve, and what you're doing is picking up a club. You have to be really careful with the application of that one. But in contrasting to Naomi, you have somebody like Job.
Yeah, and Job, did, you know, both grieved, all right? Coming to grips with the new normal involves grief. It's not the absence of grief. It's grieving well. Mm. How do you grieve well? And so Naomi is just battered and bruised and traumatized by what has happened. And she cannot imagine how God could have done this to her. And Job, who actually suffered a far greater loss, all of his possessions, all of his servants, all of his children, falls on his face and says to his wife, "The Lord gives, the Lord takes. Yeah. Blessed be the name of the Lord." I cannot comprehend that.
No, neither can I. We're up against a break. We'll pick it up there when we come back. And the thing about Job is that they go, "Hey, I would have rather this never happened." But here we are, you know, 3,000, 4,000 years later. When I meet Job, one of my questions will be, "Hey, Job, would you have changed that if you could now?" But now he's seen. Can you imagine all the people that have come to heaven and met him and go, "Thank you so much for going through what you went through." We'll be right. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday, with our friends at BJU Seminary down in Greenville, South Carolina. Just incredible what God's doing down there, and has been for years, by the way, not just at the seminary, but at the university. We have a little page that our friends down at BJU Seminary set up for us. So each week that we have another professor or leader on from the seminary, and this week Dr. Sam Horn's back in the house with BJU Seminary. Usually we're working off of a blog. BJU is becoming just a great thought leader in a lot of different areas. And so there's blogs that will generally are writing specifically for the topic of the show. It's a great partnership, and there's been so much fruit coming off of that already. And we've only been at it for a couple of months. And so today we're basing it off of, it's called The Theology of Trial, Finding Your New Normal on the Fire Road, which Sam wrote with Les Olala, who was just on last week. And so just a great topic. And Finding Your New Normal is a book that's going to be coming out that these brothers have written together. So today, talking about how we're dealing with our grief and whatever your fire road looks like, especially this time of year. Next week, so many of us are excited about Thanksgiving. We're going to be with families. We're going to be exploring the bounds of our gluttony. We're going to have a lot of fun. And for a lot of people, this is the worst time of year. For most of us, it's the greatest time of year. We love this time of year. But for a lot of people, they would rather go sit in a hole and climb into a cave somewhere and make it all go away, because it's very difficult. And I know some of you, that's where you're at right now. So that's why it's so helpful that we're going through this, acknowledging the first step. We're finishing up with acceptance, and we're going to talk about adaptation or adapting after that. But moving from acknowledging to acceptance of our new normal requires, this is really powerful, Sam, dethroning self, enthroning God, and employing the fuel of worship and gratitude. What does that look like? It sounds great. I think we understand that biblically, but what does that look like practically?
Well, to come back to our illustration of Naomi and Job, I mean, the both of them contrast that. They both talk to God, and they both talk about God, but they do it in very different ways. They're both in the throes of immense pain and suffering and grief, deep loss. I mean, I think you mentioned a minute ago, we're walking into a wonderful week of Thanksgiving, but for a lot of families, there's going to be a table or two or a chair or two maybe empty at that table.
That's right.
Because they lost somebody during COVID, or they lost somebody to COVID, or something major happened, a job was lost. Their normal that they enjoyed last Thanksgiving isn't the same today. And a lot of people struggle with that. And that's why this book, I think, is so helpful. And we look at the whole idea of fueling worship with two things, trust and gratitude. And in order for us to trust, we have to bow.
Yeah.
We really have to dethrone ourselves. And we just have to admit God knows things, and God is up to things that we may not fully know.
That's right.
And that's the difference between Job and Naomi. Job comes, I mean, Naomi comes back to Bethlehem. Let's pick that story back up. She comes back to Bethlehem, and all the women remember her, and they greet her, "Hey, Naomi." And she looks at those women and says, "Don't call me that. Don't call me that anymore, because when I left here, I left full, but the hand of God was harsh against me, and I'm coming back empty. So don't call me Naomi, call me Mara." And the word Mara means bitter, sour. And because that's how she felt. This is what God had reduced her to.
Yeah.
But over time, God starts doing little providences. You know, Ruth goes out, finds a field, comes back with an overflowing grain basket. Whose field was it? Oh, that's our kinsman. That's our kinsman redeemer. And by the end of the story, everything has changed for Naomi. And she's holding a little baby that God gave to Ruth. And the women came back to her and said, "We want to name that baby." And they named the baby Obed, because they're saying to Naomi, "God has given you a son.
Wow.
You told your daughter-in-laws there were no more sons, and God has given you a grandson." And you know the story, right? Obed's the father of Jesse, who's the father of David, who's the father of Jesus.
And on and on and on it goes.
I mean,
yes.
It's amazing what God gave back to Naomi.
Despite Naomi's original bad attitude.
All right. So
God
so
brings
God
Christ out of that line. I mean, it's amazing.
And then Job, on the other hand, worships.
Yeah.
And he says things like, "The Lord gives, the Lord takes. Blessed be the name of the Lord." And then later on, he says, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust him."
Wow.
And no matter what you throw at Job, the writer of Job can come back and say, "But Job did not sin with his lips, nor did he charge God foolishly." So there was a trust, even in the midst of all the questioning. It wasn't sort of this stoic trust. I mean, Job pours his heart out to God in lament. And God speaks back to Job, not with answers, but with presence.
Yeah, that's right. Such
and
a
that
powerful
makes all
point.
The difference.
Yep, makes all
so,
the difference.
You know, so that's how you move from acknowledgement, which happens because reality won't be denied, to acceptance. Mm-hmm. When you realize God did this or God allowed this, and now I've got to do something in my new normal. Am I just going to sit here? Or am I going to actually serve God in my new normal?
Yeah, and that's jumping into this next point, adapting or adaptation. That's where you're okay, you go, "Hey, God just gave me a stink bomb." No, at this point, this is what I'm thinking of as I'm reading through this blog post and talking about adapting. Like acknowledgement and acceptance, adaptation is a choice, one in which we move beyond accepting to thriving in our new normal. The secret to adapting, realizing trials are all about our good and God's glory. So that's why I mentioned on the break that all of a sudden you're a steward of this. This
Correct.
Fire road in your life. Now you're a
Correct.
Steward, and now you're moving into, okay, instead of asking, "Lord, why did this happen to me?" I think the question then becomes, what are we going to do with this?
Well, and so stewards, Paul said, there's one thing God expects of a steward, and that is that he would be found faithful with what God gave him to steward. And so I think of this next step, adapting, in two ideas. I think about it in terms of opportunity and a responsibility. Mm. So God has allowed this to come into my life. What does God want me to do with this now? And I've used the story. You may have heard the story of Eric Weinenmeier. Eric Weinenmeier is a very, very incredible individual. He's one of the few, one of 150 people on the planet who climbed the 7 tallest mountains in the world.
Wow!
He climbed the tallest mountain on every continent. And the stunning thing about that is Eric is blind. Now, he wasn't born blind, you know, but he became blind by 13 years of age. He denied the fact that he was going blind, didn't want to learn Braille, didn't want to use a service dog. So by the time he went blind, he had to learn Braille. And one day, as he was reading a magazine in Braille, he read about somebody, a blind person, who could rock climb. And that launched him. And 18 years later, he literally climbed, as a blind man, mountains that most of us with two eyes at work could never even attempt.
Yeah, wow.
So he adapted.
Yeah.
And that's what we mean. And in the Bible, there's a great example of a man whose normal kept getting disrupted. And you know the story of Joseph. I mean, Joseph, you know, God gave him a dream.
Yeah,
and his
man.
Father gave him a coat. And his brothers pretty much threw him in a pit.
Yeah, gave him a beating and put him in chains. Yeah, unbelievable.
And there went his normal, right? Yeah. And so he lands in Potiphar's house and adapts. And by the time he's done adapting, he's running Potiphar's house. And then his normal blows up again through a false accusation. He could have said, you know, God, this is strike two. I've been faithful to you.
Yep.
And you let me be sold as a slave, and I kept being faithful to you. And strike two, now I'm being, you know, falsely accused, and I'm going to prison. And in prison, he adapts. And he literally rises to the top, and he's running this prison. And the only reason you know God is still in his life is because God keeps giving him dreams.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, his normal changes again, and he's running Egypt. As the, think about it, he's an outsider, and he's the second most powerful man in Egypt,
that's
and
crazy.
He saves Egypt, and he saves the world from hunger, and he saves his family, because he adapted to a new normal. And at the very end of his life, he names his two sons interesting names. He names one boy Manasseh, which means God caused me to forget the pain I've experienced in this land, and the other boy was named Ephraim, because God has made me to flourish and to be bountiful in my house.
And that's
what
that.
A
well,
story.
Incredible stories. And let me jump in there on the word flourish, because as we move from adapting to accelerate, that's what you're talking about, flourishing. So you're like, okay, I'm just going to survive this. Do you survive or do you thrive? What's God's desire? His desire is always that we should have life and have it abundantly, which to me sounds like thriving. So you sit there and go, and not to say that it's going to be easy or rah-rah, sis, boom, bah, or you're going to have a week at Disney as you go through this. But that's that notion of accelerating, which is the fourth point, which really puts you into the Joseph story, is, okay, now you start to see there's incredible opportunity here, which is not bemoaning the pain and the loss and the suffering. But to
it's
realize,
not ignoring.
No,
right?
Not ignoring
not
it at all.
You're not diminishing it or denying it.
No, right. You're just all of a sudden you found hope and purpose and meaning and blessings off that tree. And if you're the one that gets planted in the dirt in order to give life to all this new fruit, I think for all of us, if we're going to follow Christ's pattern, that's it. That Job said, hey, though he slay me, still I trust in him. If you're going to take my life and bury me in the dirt, fine, because I can trust the Lord's going to bring fruit out of that.
Yeah, and so I think coming back to this idea of now that I've acknowledged, accepted, and adapted, God is ready to accelerate me into a new lane of ministry. Let me give you a tangible modern-day story of this.
Well, just start it, because we're going to hit a break in about 30 seconds. So just tease it a little, and then we'll get
to
it in the
last
second.
200,000 wheelchairs, 66,000 families impacted and trained to help their handicapped loved one, physically challenged loved one, 111,000 Bibles given out. Tens of thousands of people coming to know the Lord. Who would not want to have a ministry like that?
No kidding.
Who would not want to show up to God and say, this is what I'm bringing with my life?
Well, my question there, I'll raise my hand in the back of the class, Sam, and say, hey, I'll sign up, but what's it going to cost me?
Well, that's that. We'll find out.
All right, we'll find out. And you're all going to know this name when we come back and the price that this person paid. But for what? Was it worth it? We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday, with our friends at BJU Seminary, talking to Dr. Sam Horn today, talking about and kind of working off of this blog post that I've shared multiple times on Facebook just this afternoon during the show and beforehand, The Theology of Trial, Finding Your New Normal on the Fire Road. Fire Road is a reference to, you'll remember the picture, just world famous. It's still famous, even though it took place almost 20 years now, 60 years ago now. With little Kim Phuc Pan Thai, which was the Vietnamese girl that was hit with the napalm and running down the street. She was naked. She was burned. And so that's her Fire Road, which eventually led her to faith in Christ. And so that's kind of
one
of the linchpins.
That picture was seen around the world. It's called The Picture That Was Seen Around the World.
Wow, literally.
And many people credit it to sort of bringing all of that conflict you know, to an end.
Yep. Yeah.
It's an incredible picture.
The realities of war. So we've been working through these four points as you're kind of working through your own fire road and the challenges you have in your life and your loss and your pain and your grief and the moaning and the groaning, and there's a place for all of that. But the Lord has a bigger plan than just the grief and just the problems that it brings. Acknowledge, accept, adapt, and accelerate. We're finishing up with accelerate, which this portion of the blog post started with this. God has no intention of wasting your pain. And once we are thriving through spirit-enabled adaptation, we are ready and eager for him to use us in new and fresh ways. To put it in my simple street-level language, Sam, I've been saying something for years, that unlike the federal government, nothing gets wasted in God's economy. Nothing.
That's right. And pain becomes some of the most valuable currency that God uses. Mm. You know, sometimes when we go through pain, and it disrupts our life. It's so destabilizing, and we don't really know who to talk to. In fact, we don't even know how to talk about it. And so sometimes, sadly, we don't even know how to talk to God about that.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about all of the people we've been talking about, Joseph, Job, even Naomi, they all talked to God. And there's a biblical parallel, or biblical paradigm, rather, for this, and it's called lament. Lament is actually a prayer that's birthed in pain that actually leads to trust. Mm. And there's a whole book called Lamentations.
Yeah.
In our Bible, right? But there are numbers of laments. You know, these are prayers that are filled with pain and anguish. And yet the people who are praying those prayers bow down before God, they trust God, and they affirm their desire to obey God, even in this incredible trial they're in.
Yeah.
And I know many of your listeners are going through that and have their own fire roads. And God wants to, like you said, use the pain and not waste it. We started, you know, the last section, with the story about 200,000 wheelchairs being distributed to people whose lives were changed by them. 66,000 families educated and equipped to know how to serve and help a loved one or family member who had a life-altering handicap or disability come into their life. 111,000 Bibles distributed over the course of many years, and tens of thousands of people that heard the gospel, and many of them that came to know Christ. And you said, well, what's the price tag for that?
Yeah.
Well, the price tag actually happened to the founder of that ministry in 1967 in the month of July, when a 17-year-old girl went out for a swim with her sister, went out into the ocean and swam out to a little raft that was sort of anchored there, and dove off that raft, and the bottom was so shallow, she hit the bottom and severed a portion of her spine and never walked again, and was herself in a wheelchair. And you know her, obviously, as Johnny Erickson Tata.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the price tag for this incredible ministry that God has given to her. And I think, you know, as we think about a Bible pattern for this, I when I think of her ministry, I think of the Apostle Paul, who had this amazing response when he found himself constrained in ways that he would never have anticipated. At the peak of his ministry, I mean, here's an apostle. Everywhere he goes, he's sharing the gospel. Entire cities are coming to Christ. Like he shows up at Thessalonica, and he opens up his mouth, and the way it's described is, you turn from idols to serve the living God and to wait for the coming of his son from heaven. And the whole region knows about you.
Yeah.
That's how powerful this was, right? Yeah. And it happened at Ephesus. It happened everywhere he went. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of all of that, God stops all the action and sticks the star player of all of this in jail. And he's writing to the Philippians, and he's saying to the Philippians that the circumstances that he's in have abounded rather unto the furtherance of the gospel.
Jeez, yeah, it's crazy.
You know, you're sitting there going, he was in a Roman jail. I mean, it's not like our jails today.
Right.
You know, you had to get your own food. You had to persuade people to come in and help you. And if you were in the prison for the reasons Paul was in, you were viewed as a traitor. You were viewed as seditious, and nobody wanted to hang out with you. So here's this prisoner in chains, and he's actually saying things like, hey, this is really the very best thing God could have done for the gospel.
It's so mind-boggling to think of that.
It actually was, because by the time Paul is done, the gospel has gone to the Praetorian Guard, which is Nero's own personal guard.
Yep.
He had been chained to some of those soldiers, and by the end of it, the gospel is in Rome. It's in Nero's own household. You know, when God chooses to advance the gospel through our pain, it's unstoppable. I've often wondered, you know, what is God up to when he trusts one of his servants with unbelievable, almost unbearable suffering?
Yeah. Yep.
And you think about this, if you don't know the Lord and you're not a believer, the same kind of stuff happens to you. Your kids get cancer. Your kids get in accidents. Your kids, you know, get pregnant out of wedlock. Yeah. All this stuff happens to you. Your spouse gets sometimes hit by an unexpected, you know, accident or driver that wasn't watching, and you're at a funeral. And all of a sudden, God says to one of his servants, I need a missionary. I need somebody who's going to take the gospel to people in that kind of pain. Mm-hmm. And you're like, God, I'm in for that. Let me read up on that. I'm gonna go to Grief Share. I'm going to learn how to talk to those people.
You're not ready.
God says, no, that's not what I need.
That's right.
I'm actually going to put you in the bed next to them. Mm-hmm. You're going to be in the waiting room with them.
That's right.
Waiting for news about your 9-year-old boy or your 9-year-old daughter. You're going to be in the same funeral home, one chapel over, having the same funeral. And they're going to look at you in the midst of your grief and your loss, and they're going to say, how in the world are you making it?
That's right.
And the answer is going to be Jesus.
That's right. The answer is going to be Christ and what the God of the Bible is doing in your life through the power of the Holy Spirit. That's why whenever I talk about this subject, whenever it comes up, Sam, I always end up back at 2 Corinthians chapter 1. And you're talking about God uniquely qualifying you, because you're not qualified to do it otherwise. You can be empathetic, you can be kind, you can be a good listener, but not until you've walked down that fire road yourself are you actually equipped to minister to people in the same arena. So starting in verse 3, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and a God of all comfort. You're like, really? It doesn't sound like it in the midst of all this. Who, verse 4, comforts us in all of our affliction, here you go, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. He comforts you. You turn around. You become a steward of that in order to comfort others. And nobody else can play that role except you in the way specifically that you've suffered and whatever loss you've experienced.
And to go back to what we said really earlier in the broadcast, in order for that to happen, you have to dethrone yourself.
Yeah.
And you have to say, God, I had all these dreams. I had all these expectations. I had all these anticipations and these hopes, but this life was never mine. Mm. You told me that I was bought with a price.
Yep.
I'm not my own. And so you're in charge, and it's your life. And if you want to put it in a wheelchair, or you want to put it in a hospital bed, or you want me to go through a funeral that I never anticipated, or whatever you want, Lord, you want to put me wherever you want to put me, it's your life. I just want it to count for you. I want all of this pain to lead me to you, just like that fire road led Kim Fook to you.
And it makes it so much easier to endure all that, knowing that there's blessings. And now we can go to Romans 8:28 and talk about how God's going to use everything and work it together for good. And you see that, but you can't see that until you go through that mess.
That's why when you hit Romans 8:28 too soon, you can actually really make people mad.
Yep.
I remember I was going through a trial, and some guy came up in a parking lot and sang a hymn to me about, you know, we'll understand it all by and by. And to this day, I have an aversion to that hymn. Great theology.
Yes.
Great truth. Wrong timing.
Yeah, bad timing.
And so, you know, oftentimes we throw the Romans 8:28, which is absolutely true.
Absolutely.
But man, when we see the bigger picture, then we can look at Romans 8:28 and we can testify to that. We can say, you know what? That's me. That's exactly what God did
that's
in
right.
my life.
That's right. Yeah, such a powerful platform that you couldn't get otherwise. And that's one of the challenges. We did a little fundraising house party recently for the ministry, Sam. And one of the things that I shared, because some people in the audience decided to, you know, I asked them, what do you guys think of the ministry? Why do you think it's important to support it? And one of the people said, you know, I really appreciate your authenticity and the things that you share on the air, because it reminds us that nobody's beyond struggles. Nobody's beyond going through trials, and these tough things happen, and oftentimes we're so ashamed of it, we don't talk about it. You mentioned it earlier. Our 20-year-old son almost a year ago to the day, told us with his girlfriend that they're pregnant. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, this goes from theoretical to real. And then the question becomes, what do I do with this story? And I don't share it all the time, but I share it enough that it's uncomfortable for my family. It's certainly uncomfortable for my son. But we sit there and go, and because that baby Paxton is a huge blessing in our lives every day. And instead they go, this is not a story that's ours to keep, because this can be used to bless and help others, according to what I just read, 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Sam, we're out of time, but what a great blessing to have you on today. Thank you so much for leading us down this road. I know it's been a blessing to me and others.
Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
And happy Thanksgiving to you and
Amen.
All of your guests.
Thanks, pal. You
praying
too.
That God will use the broadcast to those who
Amen.
Are finding their
Thank new you homes. So much for that. Hold on. We're going to pray right after it's over. God willing, everybody, I'll be back tomorrow. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.